First, Zimbabwe. For years in bad health, its 93-year-old despot, Mugabe, he's been finally ousted. Why has Mugabe been forced out? Why has his near four-decade rule come to an end? Is it because Zimbabwe's military wants to ensure Mugabe's wife, it's Grace, does not take power herself, as Mugabe himself recently flagged? Or does Mugabe's downfall have more to do with Zimbabwe's basket case economy? Apparently, his government no longer has enough funds to pay civil servants, the police, and most crucially, the army. Well, one thinker who just last year predicted that 2017 would mark the end of Mugabe, he's this week's guest. Peter Oborne is a columnist with the Daily Mail in Britain who has written widely and produced documentaries on Zimbabwe. He is, for mine, one of the West's leading experts on the failed state formerly known as Rhodesia. Peter, welcome back to Between the Lines.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
What's triggered the military attempt to bring down Mugabe?
There are a number of things. One of the factors you just mentioned was the economic collapse, but there was also something else, which is, I think Mugabe was trying to ensure the survival of his dynasty through his second wife, Grace. In other words, he was going to keep in being this tiny group of very corrupt creatures who've made a fortune, staggering sums of money out of the state of Zimbabwe, while the vast majority of Zimbabwe people are very close to starvation and certainly in misery. And when that emerged, that was their course of action. The army started to mobilize earlier this month. Emmerson Mnangagwa, he was fired as vice president. He's the security chief, or was. I think that was the moment when Mugabe overstretched the mark after 37 years of running the country. And at that moment, the army started to mobilise against him.
And you saw the writing on the wall. I mean, you wrote in The Spectator and The Daily Mail a year or so ago. You predicted, quote, "We're entering the last few months of the Mugabe era. His health is not the real problem." And you went on to say, "Zimbabwe is now spiralling downwards into an economic crisis so vicious and acute that it leaves no possibility that the president, for all his famed political skills and notorious readiness to resort to violence, can save himself." So tell us more about the underlying socio-economic tensions that paved the way for Mugabe's downfall, Peter.
Well, part of it is the fact that there was basically a kleptocracy. I mean, Mugabe started out as the leader of the revolution, in the same position in Zimbabwe in some ways as the great Mandela was in South Africa. But he didn't go the same trajectory, which was forgiveness and reconciliation and wisdom, which was Mandela's journey. He went into sectarianism and ultimately into kleptocracy. So that was a very bad journey. And after a while, after a long time, it had disastrous economic effects. The first thing they did was this experiment in printing money, which led to the hyperinflation of Weimar-style hyperinflation of 2008, when the currency was sort of doubling every half an hour in its, also halving every half an hour in its value. And then they went on to the dollar, and that caused a further set of problems. They couldn't raise money, and then they started producing bond notes, which were fabricated notes, really. The money started to drain out of the country. The economy died, really. I mean, it was extraordinary. I was there last year, and that's why I figured that was what was going to happen, because I could see, you could feel the economy dying, the government revenues dying. They weren't able to pay the police, let alone, and that's the moment I figured that is it's going to go. This regime, which has lasted for 37 years and has been so pernicious, is going to have to go.
The military's problem, it seems to me, is to hand back power that the generals insist they don't want after stripping it so obviously from Mugabe. How then do you think this political crisis is likely to play out?
Well, on balance, I'm quite hopeful. I mean, we have got rid of a monster. The world was one less monster in the world, in power in the world tonight. And so that's the first very hopeful thing. The second thing is that there hasn't been a lot of bloodshed. In other words, the army has been united. The danger is that there will be a civil war and a reversion to tribal warfare, in which case you will see happen to Zimbabwe what's happened to the Congo or South Sudan, I mean, where you veer into slaughter and even into genocide. And actually, it doesn't feel like that. The army's behaved quite responsibly, and I think that Emmerson Mnangagwa will become the temporary leader. Now,
well, hang on, he's the blood-stained architect of the genocide in Western Zimbabwe, which claimed something like 20,000 lives in the 80s, right?
Correct.
Well, that's not a good sign.
Well, and indeed, you can go further than that. You can say that he lies at the heart of the cult of violence, which has been the ruling party ZANU-PF's solution to its political problems for 30 years. But on the other hand, as I say, this is a very, very perilous moment. Mnangagwa is also a pragmatist. You know, it isn't perfect, and it might be horrific, but he's a pragmatist, he's highly intelligent, and he has the respect. In fact, he's the one person who can order the army back into its barracks and get them to go there. And he's a man of business. Now, he's backed, by the way, in my understanding, by Western governments, Australia, Britain, and others, for that reason, because they feel that if you don't have him, you know, that the alternative is a fresh level, a lower level of horror.
But what about that movement for democratic change? I mean, how does the opposition fit into this scenario? Because they presumably have a bit of support in the capital, right?
More than a bit of support. If there was a free election tomorrow, there's no question that the opposition parties, the MDC, the Movement for Democratic Change under Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader who's ill at the moment, sadly, would sweep to power. Now, there are meant to be elections next year. Now, the question is, will Mnangagwa have the foresight and wisdom to be, you know, a Pinochet or a Franco, the despotic leader who takes over and then takes the country, guides the country he leads temporarily to democracy? Will he allow free democratic elections to take place next year? Or will he, you know, inaugurate a new period of despotism? That we don't know the answer to that question. But I do understand, you are quite right to point out that he was the architect of the Gukurahundi, the Matabele land genocide of the early 80s, when an attempt was basically made.
That was shortly after Mugabe came to power, right?
Very shortly. Very shortly after Mugabe came to power. Mugabe had the support of the Shona tribe in the east, and he just went after the Nebele in the west and killed maybe, we think, about 20,000 people down. You know, their bodies are still being recovered today. And it was ignored at the time by the West because they so wanted Mugabe to become a success. And we pretended our government, the Thatcher government in Britain, just didn't notice.
And you could say the same thing about Malcolm Fraser's government here in Australia. My guest is the Daily Mail's Peter Oborne, who about 15 years ago, and this is how I came to know Peter, he travelled undercover through Zimbabwe making the BBC Channel 4 documentary Mugabe's Secret Famine. Peter, the cold hard reality is that Mugabe had quite a bit of support across the country. He was, after all, a leading liberator against white rule 4 decades ago. What's his legacy?
Well, it's a terrible legacy because he inherited this country, which is one of the economic powerhouses of Africa. It had the rule of law. It had democratic institutions. It had a superb infrastructure. It had a good economy. Now, over time, he just destroyed all of that. And in recent years, I mean, it's been terrible to behold, you know, the pillage, the corruption, the greed of an elite, a tiny elite, and the impoverishment of the vast majority and the population's decline. It's been an economic disaster zone. And so his legacy is terrible. The world will curse, historians will curse Robert Mugabe because he could have been a great leader. As you know, in neighbouring South Africa, Mandela came out of 30 years of repression and horror and apartheid, and showed how you lead a country out of that kind of backwardness and repression and horrible division and make it work. Now, Mugabe did the opposite.
What about his wife, Grace? I mean, she had been groomed as her husband's successor since, I think, 2014. She's often been disparaged as a shopaholic, Gucci Grace, the first shopper, all that. But she's head up the ruling party's Women's League, and she's also very popular with the ZANU PF's Youth League. What does she fit into this now?
There was an attempt by Grace, sanctioned by Mugabe, which slightly suggested he was losing his grip, to make her his successor. Mm. In other words, to turn his personal rule into dynastic rule. And I never felt that was ever going to work. I doubt that she has as much popular following among the cadres of ZANU-PF as you've just suggested. Mm. The immediate successor is Emmerson Mnangagwa. What would happen if there were democratic elections next year, and they are due next year, is you would then get an electoral victory for the Movement for Democratic Change and the other democratic parties. Now, that may be asking too much, because you're then asking ZANU-PF, which has been in power since independence 37 years ago, to give up power. But I certainly think that something can be negotiated. I do think this is the most hopeful moment in Zimbabwe's history for 25 years.
A hopeful moment, but you have been one of the West's leading critics of Mugabe and Zimbabwe, and yet you're wild about Zimbabwe. You love the place. Why?
Well, anybody, actually, I'm sure that lots of people listening tonight have been to this gorgeous, wonderful, incredibly beautiful country. It's high up there in the heart of Africa. And any Zimbabwean you ever meet is just the most lovely person, kind, compassionate, great fun, and very, very welcoming, and very well educated. If they can restore the rule of law and bring back political stability, the country will bounce back just like that. I'm really hopeful that I've always felt that would happen, because the people are so good. If only they can solve this problem of a corrupt elite, murderous, violent elite. Nobody can predict the future from here. I certainly don't feel confident. But I do feel this is a hopeful moment. I think that people can get it right together. The reason I feel so confident is that the people of Zimbabwe are the most wonderful people.
Peter, reasons to be upbeat. Thanks so much for being on the show again.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure, Tom. Thank you very much.